I mean.
Let's do this.
Welcome to the CubeCast podcast, minus an annoying little Mitch. I'm Waffo, and joined with me is Brandon, a.k.a. Ronza, a.k.a.
Hi.
The Love Master. Today is May 2nd, and today we're going to have a slightly different episode. We're going to have two wonderful guests here today. Isn't that right?
Yeah, what we have planned for this episode are two guests. We have two really big names in blindfolded cubing. Roman Strakov of Russia, who's gotten the five blind world record now three times, and Mark Boyanowski from the U.S., who's gotten North American record for multi-blind now twice. Currently has a 31 out of 32. So we're going to just bring you guys in right now. Welcome, both of you, Roman and Mark. How are you guys doing?
Hello. Great.
Pretty good.
Good. Good to hear.
All right. Great. So why don't you guys tell us about yourselves, basically your cubing history, what you've achieved up to now, just in case people haven't heard of you, and your current cubing experience, basically. Let's start off with Roman.
Okay. Well, I started cubing for about 5 years ago. I was living in Siberia, so I haven't really an opportunity to visit competitions, because all Russian competitions are in Moscow, and Siberia is like the geographical middle of Russia. So I've been cubing for about 1.5 years since that, and then I visited my first competition in Moscow, which was pretty exciting. I thought the main event, 2x3, has pretty, you know, dense competition, so I can't really achieve some decent results in that, in the main event or main events. So I thought I should probably either do big cubes or blind, and so it turned out I do big cubes blind. So yeah, no, I really started to push big cubes. I was solving 7x7 faster than Vladislav Shavelsky, who is currently the national record holder. But he started to progress really fast, and I thought, okay, well, whatever. The thing is, the blindfolded cubing is the most interesting thing out of cubing, like, for me, because it's one of the most difficult things, and since that, it's just interesting. that's fascinating. And so then I, after visiting my first competition and got my first five blind success, I got really excited, and I wanted to, you know, push it. The next year, I got my first national record, which was 7:08, I believe. I was really struggling that I couldn't attend competitions very often, so I should, you know, when I wait for a year for going to a competition, because it's really expensive to get from Siberia to Moscow. I mean, it's twice more expensive than getting like from Moscow to any European country. So yeah, I have only three attempts a year. Well, I used to have, and so I failed every time I wanted to have a world record. It was a shame that almost every solve at home was sub WR, and in competition I was just having second place in the world for several times in a row. And so then I moved to Moscow, and then I suddenly started to have a lot of competitions, and of course I got a world record, and that got me even more excited about about five blind and stuff. And so I only practiced five blinds for the last year, and I got several world records, and I'm about to improve it even better. So yeah, that's background.
Cool stuff.
All right, thank you for that. Now Mark, go ahead and introduce yourself and tell us about your cubing history, how you got started, and where you've gone with your cubing career.
Well, I don't really remember exactly how long I've been cubing. I probably learned how to solve a 3x3 maybe like 4 or 5 years ago. I'm not sure if it was quite that long, but I probably just like saw a Rubik's Cube in a store or something and decided to find online how to solve it. And I was into like unofficial events like different 3x3 shape mods and stuff for a long time. before I even knew about competitions. And then once I started going to competitions in 2014 and realized how bad I was at sighted events, I eventually decided to try to learn blindfolded. I got my first three blind success. I actually learned three blind at first because of Michigan 2014, and I saw that Mike Huey was going. I'd seen some of his blindfolded results on YouTube and just wanted to learn to do 3x3 blindfolded so I could at least, like when I met him, so I could at least say that I could do blind. So I got my first three blind success July 4th, 2014. And it was 7 minutes, 10 seconds, I think. And then I got into big blind and multi-blind more later. I was really into 5 blind at first. It was my favorite blind event for a while. When NIR was 11:38, I thought it was going to be fairly easy for me to beat, and then I just put too much pressure on myself, got a lot of DNFs in competition, and then Kale Schoen got it down to, you know, sub-6:30, and I kind of gave up on practicing that as much. And I know, I know, it's sad. But then, probably like near the end of 2015 was kind of when I decided to get more back into multi, and I realized that was an event that I was, at the time, kind of far away from NIR, but I thought if I practiced it a little bit, I could get there. And I got to round 24 cubes, got my first NIR Minnesota winner, 2016. And it's 24 out of 24, and I've just been practicing mostly multi since then. And I practice a little bit of three blind, but mostly multi.
Yeah, and now you've got Roman, you've got a 501 five blind world record, and Mark, you've got a 31 out of 32 in, with a 54-27?
Yep, that's right.
Yeah, for multi. Crazy stuff from both of you, and Mark, I had no idea that you were really big into five blind. I had absolutely no idea. We talk normally, and it always seemed like you were doing FMC or multi.
Yeah, I five blind was my favorite event for a while, and now I'm probably around like sub-8 at the time when I was going for, and when NIR was like 11:38, I was probably at least sub-11 or sometimes sub-10.
All right, cool. Yeah. All right, so thank you both for your introductions. Now we're going to move on to our question and answer section. First, I have a few questions for both of you. Waffle has some, and the rest of our team has some more questions. Afterward, we're going to get to some listener stuff. So, from me, what are your memorization schemes, if they're not SPEFs, and how did you come up with them? Let's start with Roman.
My SPEFs are actually Kyrillic, so it's based in Russian alphabet.
Okay.
Actually, I wish I could do the Latin letters to later use the English words, but when I was learning blind, I was just following the tutorial and did whatever the guy said. tutorial, by the way. Yeah, the first big blind tutorial in Russian was in 2012. It was filmed by Oleg Rutsenko, who is currently the delegate. Yeah, and this is actually the moment when I started big blinds, the early 2012. So about my memorization, well, I just use letter pairs, make words out of them, and make stories out of words, just as all guys do, I think.
Yeah, and Mark, you use SPEFs, don't you?
Yes, I have the most boring memorization scheme. It's SPEFs with white top, green front.
So. do you guys want to explain what SPEFs actually is?
I would
for
like
the people who actually don't do blind, like me.
Oh, yes. I should probably have brought that up, too.
For corners, it's like... It's basically you just go alphabetically from, like, the top left clockwise on each face. So, like, UBL is A, and then it just goes clockwise around to B, C, and D. And for edges, it's kind of the same thing. It starts at, like, the top edge on the... Like, that's best I can explain, I guess. It starts on the top edge on the face and goes alphabetically.
But the best
around.
Part about SPEFs is that it can be very easily adapted to... big cubes and bigger cubes. So for any, I think just for N by N stuff, you can use the same lettering scheme for all the different kinds of pieces that you could possibly come across. At least until 7x7.
Yeah, I would like to attempt a Megamix blind at some point, but I have no idea what kind of scheme people use for that.
So, yeah, the only reason I ask is because. In the past week, Jay McNeil posted a video on YouTube about getting better at blind. It's his thoughts on 3x3 blindfolded improvement. I don't know if you guys happen to see this. It's like a half hour of him explaining his actually pretty interesting memorization scheme and his techniques. I know that, Mark, you helped him a lot with coming up with his letter pair list, and in return, he's been helping you get better algs for your 3x3 stuff. But yeah, I just thought it was interesting, something that could be brought up. So that's all for my questions. All
right, great, great. All right, so the next question is actually from me for both of you guys. It's mainly about your journey going up to where you guys are now, but like, what was the most stressful part about becoming good at your respective events? In this case, Mark, Multi, and then Roman, your 5-blind.
Well, I will let Mark to start.
Sure thing.
Thanks, okay,
let's see, it's most stressful part. The most stressful part was probably like when I was really close to getting NAR the first time and thinking, especially at Keep Portland Quiet 2016 when I failed at getting NAR, and just the nervousness of thinking someone was going to come out and beat it, because a lot of people really started practicing multi at the same time I was starting to get good at it. So maybe that was the most stressful part, like going to competitions and kind of racing against the clock, like when I was really close to it and thought maybe other people were going to set the bar a lot higher. So.
Okay. Interesting. So the stressful part about you getting there was basically how other people were performing.
Yeah, I just... also, I think put a lot of pressure on myself in competitions, which I still would say I do worse at competitions for any events that I like and better for any events that I don't like.
Okay, because you just don't care. Okay, yeah.
Yeah.
I should just stop caring about all my events too, I guess. That's the only way to make it good.
All right, and for Roman?
For me, I think the most stressful part used to be saving money for a whole year. For one competition, and then go into it and failing. well, taking it seriously, one of the most stressful parts was when you're practicing like your favorite event, and then you got to some point, to some barrier, where you cannot get faster. You think that, oh, okay, this is my limit. I cannot get faster. But then it turned out you just wait for a week or so, and then you just start. You know, you again have to practice and get even better times and got your personal bests and stuff. So it's real about time. It's real about improving and practicing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool stuff.
All right. So now we got some questions from the rest of our team. From Corey Sikowski, this is for Mark. How many cubes do you do at home for your multi-attempts, and how much do you practice, and how often do you practice?
I try to do an attempt at least every other day. Sometimes I'll do attempts for a few days in a row. And I try to do basically any number that I can do, like just barely over an hour, like sub an hour, 5 minutes, I would say, and then try to get that down. So lately I've been practicing mostly 38 cubes, and I've gotten it pretty close to an hour a few times. The only exception is right before, like maybe a week before competitions, and then I attempt whatever I plan to do at the competition to make sure I'm used to using my rooms that way.
All right. Yeah, it's interesting. So, like, before a competition, I was going to ask, like, before a competition, you just switch gears and go for, you pick your number, and then you stick with that number for the whole, for that whole week until you get to the competition? Or do you sometimes, like, assess where you're at and then choose however many cubes you're going to do as the week goes on?
I guess it sort of depends. Like, I usually try to pick something maybe like two or three cubes below, like, what I'm trying to push under an hour. And definitely if I were to try it and then see that it's over an hour or something, then I would probably have to reassess things and go for less. Or maybe if it was a lot faster than I expected, maybe I'd go for more. But usually I just kind of pick something that I expect to be around 55 or 57 minutes and just practice that for the week before a competition.
Okay, awesome.
Our other team member, our web developer, Statue Korik, actually asked for both of you. This is actually a really cool question that I didn't think of, but he was implying that people who get as good as you guys are have either kind of figured something out or something clicked in your head. But basically, what are your drills? Like, what do you do to obtain your skill?
I'll let Roman go first on this one. I have to think about this.
I'm just using the Google Translate to translate the word drill.
Okay.
Oh, so the idea that he says that Stacia was asking us this yesterday, and the analogy came up, or the way that he thought of it was that when you get really good at an event, he feels like that there's more to just getting good at an event than practicing and doing a lot of the same thing over and over again and just, like, being naturally good and improving. And he wants to know if there are any techniques that you go over in your practice over and over and over again.
Okay, so I just try to improve everything about Five Blind. Like, I try to think, what can I improve? So about memorization, about execution. So recently I totally remade my algorithms tables. I basically go through every single algorithm and do a couple of variations on every single stuff and just left the best ones. So about memorization, yeah, I was experimenting a lot with the memorization order, with the memorization speed, with the repetitions, and yeah, it seems like now I'm using my best memorization scheme. So yeah, it's all about experimenting and finding the best way to do things. So that's what works for me.
I guess really the only unusual, like, thing I do to practice is just doing, like, untimed, just hand scrambling a 3x3 and kind of doing the memorization as if it was a memorization in a multi, like thinking of what the story would be, and also just practicing the three style algs, making sure all my algs are, you know, as fast as possible. Memorization is kind of a hard thing to practice for me without actually doing a multi, though. And then when I'm actually doing a multi, really, my practice isn't that unusual, except at home I do try to push myself as much as possible. In competition, I don't really, because then I tend to miss more cubes.
Yeah, you wouldn't want to do that necessarily.
I want to add something. So,
absolutely.
For the Five Blind, the memorization and execution are separated probably much more than, like, in Three Blind, if it makes sense. So it does make sense to practice memorization and execution, like, separately. So what I did for that was I made a an Android application for practice memorization, and I basically have to memorize as much images as the file blind represents. So I was practicing doing that. What I noticed was memorizing letters just as they are significantly easier, and so memorizing like 43 letter pairs took me like under a minute. My personal best is like 55 seconds, but for the file blind I usually like memorize in 2 minutes. And what's for execution, I also wrote some software to practice execution, to basically practice algorithms that I know the worst, or to what I execute the worst. So it's basically working like the delayed repetition system, like Anki or stuff. It's basically, that is, the program generates a sequence, a bunch of words that I have to execute algorithms for. And if you execute it on the solved cube, on the solved 5x5, the cube will become solved again. But no same words appear there. Otherwise, you can do like A, B, A, B, A, B case, which will do the three cycle three times. Or you can use like, I mean, the program cannot generate the inverse words. Otherwise, you can do like A, B, B, A, which will return the cube to the solved state. It works just a bit more complicated. So it generates from 5 to 7 random words, and it picks the one that it picks words that you marked as difficult. So yeah, this is why I'm practicing execution, and I also do this before the actual attempts on the computation, so it's really comfortable. So this is another like benefit of being a programmer. You can just do whatever you want for yourself to improve your life. Yeah,
that actually sounds really nice. I wish I could do that for my three blind stuff, because I'm just starting to make a letter pair list and get everything in my head. But actually, just doing three blind, it's painstaking. Like just trying to come up with stuff and remember stuff, it's going to take a lot of work. And I really need some sort of system like that. I could probably code something.
I wanted to publish this software, but who cares about the given software, especially if it. If it's about blind. No one cares about blind anyways.
I think there's a few people who might like this. Who might really like this.
I'm one of them.
Okay, so our next question is from Ty Marshall. And this is for Roman. Have you attempted 10x10 blindfolded again since the DNF from a long time ago?
No, I didn't. Actually, I did 2 attempts of 10 blinds. And it was a long time ago. It was in this period when I didn't have much possibility for coming to competitions. So I was practicing unofficial events to have, you know, some recognition from the speedcubing community, because I couldn't do official events, obviously. Yeah. So I was yeah, that's unfortunately true. But that's what motivated me to improve in blinds. So yeah.
That's cool. That's actually a really funny answer. from Tom Nelson, our creative director. How's that? A lot better? Okay, great. For Mark, how many rooms do you have for multi-blind, and do you reuse them for every attempt?
Let's see. I have enough rooms for everything but the last two cubes. The most I've done is 42 cubes at home as a while ago. And it was, so that would be 20 rooms, I guess. And those last few I haven't used again, so I probably are not, I'm not as familiar with those, but I just fit 2 cubes per room. And I do reuse the same rooms for every attempt, which is kind of bad for doing multiple attempts like the same day, but I think it's just better for me to be focusing on getting better with just single attempts, because competitions with multiple attempts don't come up too often for it to be worth it for me to create a new system of rooms, I guess, because it's hard for me to get familiar with new rooms. Takes a while.
Mark, do you do any stories and stuff for your memo?
Yeah, it's mostly like a sentence memo. I don't really picture things all that much. It's very much more like verbal memo and just remembering that the story happened in a certain location and just kind of thinking about some way to tie it to that location usually. But
okay. Do you have any funny ones though? Like, that's my big question, is if you have any funny ones.
Okay. Let's see. Do I?
Same question for Roman too. Like, come up with your funniest story right now.
Okay. I remember one story that was fans of Jay McNeil, and then I just made up boxing with Roman, which is like Ro in a superhero costume. So, and that story was happening in the location that is my grandma's living room.
Oh man.
Holy crap.
So Roman, do you have any funny stories?
I don't remember my stories, unfortunately.
Oh no.
But of course I have some, you know, images, like vital, sexy, whatever. So sometimes I have funny stories, but I just get used to having funny stories.
Okay, so. For sure. All right, so now we're going to move to our listener questions. These are from you, the listeners. Thank you so much for sending these in. If you want to submit questions, of course, you can always do that on our Facebook page or to our PR team at support@cubecast.fm.
From Roy Lee, do you guys have any favorite delegates?
Kit Clement?
Kit Clement? Okay. I love Kit.
Kit's all right.
Well, currently in Russia, we have only one delegate.
Okay.
Which
okay.
is my favorite thing.
Well, I guess that works. All right, next listener question from Dank the Bear. Mark, what's it like to be a great big shining star?
Well, you get made fun of for it a lot.
Can you actually explain why this was asked, Mark?
Oh, explain why? For anyone who doesn't know, when I was, I think it was when I was 12, yeah, 12, I think, I won an annoying orange contest where I had to say the line, "I'm a star, a great big shining star, yay," and it got put in an annoying orange episode. I would say being a great big shining star is not all it's cracked up to be, because in the first few seconds you get killed by a meteor.
And that's going on a shirt. All right.
From Kian Manser for Mark. What do you feel when you take off the blindfold and see dozens of cubes solved? Is it the feeling that makes you is it the feeling that makes it worth, you know, straining like an hour of concentration?
It depends on how many dozens of cubes are unsolved when I take the blindfold off. But I really do enjoy like the release at the end of a multi of taking the blindfold off and seeing how I did. I would say, you know, it's with it being an hour long event, I mean, even if I didn't do quite as well as I wanted to, it always feels like an accomplishment, especially if my time was better than it was before, or if it's the most cubes I've ever attempted, or something like that.
Mm-hmm. Cool stuff. I guess the question could be, like, applied to Roman as well. Mm. You know, like, what's the thrill like taking off the blindfold?
It happened so many times, so I don't have any feelings already.
The mark of a true master is just, oh, it's just another 5x5 that I just solved blindfolded.
Yes.
Stack matted, no less. Wow, that's just crazy. And our last listener question comes from Charlie Stark. For Mark, do you think that you'll be at world record level by the end of the year?
That's kind of my goal right now. I think it's definitely possible. I don't know about getting an official world record by the time. I feel like I'll probably be like around that area of over 40 cubes for a while before I'm actually able to.
Oh yeah.
You know, just because the accuracy and the time is so good of Mascot's world record, but I think I could be at that point
so
at
you
home
say,
by
like
the end of the year.
50, 60 cubes?
Whether I get it in competition. I don't know. I don't know about that high. Seems very hard. I think I could probably be doing maybe 45 by the end of the year, but it's really hard to tell how fast improvement goes because it gets slower and slower. It's hard to tell.
So that covers our whole listener section. Now we're going to take a commercial break, and when we get back, we're going to be talking about some new regs and some cool results that we got, as well as doing a brand new game. So stay tuned. This episode of the CubeCast podcast is brought to you by thecubicle.us, trusted by speedcubers and puzzlers worldwide. Check them out at www.thecubicle.us.
And we're back!
And now we're going to go on to the news section. So, the main point of news that we had are the new regs. So, since we put out our episode with Corin, new regulations have been put in place after the FMC change with T-Noodle. And after the Linus Frest's 21 move blind 21 move FMC turned to DNF and loss of a world record and all that stuff from last time, so the Halfcast covered all of the changes. We're only going to cover the ones that really apply to blind and fewest moves because you know fewest moves. I like fewest moves. Mark here likes fewest moves. I like fewest moves a lot. So the main stuff, a clarification for fewest move solutions being similar to the scrambles. So they have this now. They have like an EG, so they have an example saying like four moves shared with the inverse of the scramble sequence. They have that as an example for something that could be disqualified. How do y'all feel about that particular number used as an example?
I don't know. I mean, it's kind of a hard thing to put a limit on, in my opinion. I mean, I guess it's as good of an example as any. It's kind of weird, though, for me to sort of eliminate possible solutions that people could find just because they happen to be similar to the scramble, if that makes sense.
Yeah, I can see where you're coming from. Roman, do you have any opinion on the matter?
No, I don't have to say at all.
Oh, well, okay. And Jules?
Well, I really want to get into FMC, so knowing this information will definitely help me in my mediocre performance in the future.
Well, that sounds good. All right. Yeah, so that also covers the following change. Like a clarification for fewest move solutions that are similar to the inverse of the scramble sequence has been added. So that's all in there. And the last part was that in the case of a cumulative time limit, the result of each remaining attempt in the round is recorded as DNS, or did not start, after a competitor reaches a time limit. So this I see is kind of a problem. Like if you have a 10-minute, like at competitions around here, we usually have like a 10-minute or a 15-minute cumulative time limit for 3x3 blindfolded. So in your three attempts, you only have 10 minutes or 15 minutes, depending what the competition is, of time that the timer can actually be running before your attempt is then stopped and marked a DNF. Do you think that DNS is the right way to go about this? Because I think it should be a DNF and not a DNS. What do you guys think?
I think it should be a DNF, but that's mostly because I don't have a single DNS, and I'm proud to keep my no DNS streak alive. So another way to get a DNS is always bad news.
Oh no. Hey, Roman?
I think that the DNS is the right thing for it, because obviously if you didn't start your attempt, then that's a DNS.
That's a good point.
It yeah. just makes sense.
Yes.
Well, I don't know. Like, the way that I've always heard DNS being used is that, like, DNS means that you are eligible for the attempt and you didn't go through with it. And I don't know if I would consider competitors to be eligible for attempts if they reach a time limit.
But well, that's
a
good point.
Yeah. I guess
they were eligible.
My question would be, like, what if the cumulative limit was, like, 10 minutes and on your first two solves, like, you got 4 minutes each, you have 2 minutes left, and you're like, not going to be able to do a solve that fast, would you consider that being eligible or not?
No, you're definitely eligible for the attempt, but then comes in another regulation saying that, like, competitors must be able to do the event, but does that mean that they're able to do the event in the time limit?
Interesting.
Yeah, competitors, like, must be, like, they must be able to actually do the attempt, or to do the event, and they should not go in expecting a poor result. But, yeah, in your case, like, having those 2 minutes where you're blind might take 4 minutes.
Yeah.
Like, you're going in expecting to go to hit the time limit and expecting that bad result of a DNF. Or else, by some miracle, you get a two-minute solve or a sub-two-minute solve. So, that's kind of weird for me.
I think there could be a little more clarification for certain instances like that. Like, I don't know, if you had some ridiculously small amount of time, like, if you normally take 4 minutes and you have, like, less than 30 seconds or something, if you could technically, like, if you got something ridiculously easy and somehow got under that time, I mean, it's practical purposes, you're not really going to be able to get that time, but I don't know. There could be more clarification there, I think, in the ranks.
Well, I have nothing to say about it. So, for me, it's, like, not a big deal at all.
And Waffle?
KeepCast Podcast. Answering hard questions since 2016.
We've been answering a lot of really hard questions.
Yeah, it's actually, like, these are things that need to be thought out, and, you know, it's great that we're actually talking about it.
All right, so now we're going to move to some results. There are two main results that we wanted to talk about since the last episode. There's a 4-blind 3-minute 5.03 single by Hamin Oh of Korea. But the interesting part that the Hapcast covered both of these results I'm going to be talking about. But this first one here, it was this person's first official 4-blind attempt ever. And it's pretty fast relative to the 3-blind single of 51.53. Did you guys happen to see this in... I assume it was in CubeComps, but if it wasn't in CubeComps, then it definitely would have been on the WCA page.
I saw this on Speed Solving, and I checked the YouTube channel of this guy, and he also got a 9-blind attempt, which was off by 2 centers. Yeah, the guys, you haven't seen this?
No. I'll go ahead and link to it in the show notes after the episode. So, link to 9-blind.
You're gonna forget.
I put it in the show notes, Waff. You underestimate my power.
Yeah, I'm gonna go back through all the show notes and see where this has linked to whatever, and then see where you forgot.
As I'm editing, I straight up, like, have the show notes on the side. Anyway, that's beside the point. But go on, Roman.
That's it. I just saw it and...
Oh, that's it. Oh, so Mark, did you happen to see this solve?
No, I didn't. I didn't hear about it. But that's pretty fast, like, ratio of 4-blind to 3-blind.
His
I would say.
First attempt, though. Like, that's the biggest one.
Yeah, that's
I would imagine for his first
that's
attempt,
really
like,
impressive
nerves,
as well.
You know, getting to him. But, yeah.
Yeah.
To each their own.
It also could be the case where he's solving, like, 2:30 at home, and then the nerves and things, and 3:05
at home. Yeah, that's also possible. So he's actually faster than we think.
Just rush in comp, and then get a get a 3-minute for... instead of whatever they might be getting at home. All right, and then the next result is a 5-blind 5-minute 31.90 single by Oliver Frost, which is second in the world behind, you know, Roman. Roman, what do you feel? How do you feel about this? Do you have any thoughts?
Yeah, I have. Oliver says that he gave up practicing, but then he still managed to have some results. So.
Oh no. Competition, no, why?
No, but it's still, like, I'm gonna be honest, that's still, like, a lot slower. Because, in competitions, you naturally got a lot slower than you do it at home. Except for a few guys who have their first successful five blinds on a competition, which happened a few times. But still, 5:30 on a comp is, well, it's slower than it should be if you want to get a world record. So, especially now.
Ollie Frost being called out. No.
I hope so. I hope.
Ollie, you're just slow and bad.
Okay. No, oh no, my.
Because it's too boring not to have a competency in five blind. I'm so lonely.
Mark, it's kind of a similar story for you, because when you got, well, now you and two other people are battling for second place in the world for multi, but Moscow has been alone up there for years.
I think if I was at Moscow's point for as long as he is, I can definitely see where, and it seems like he's kind of starting to get bored. I can totally understand that.
Yeah.
I mean, being so far ahead for so long.
Yeah, I think I remember him, like, noting in a speed-solving thread of your 31 out of 32 saying, like, it's nice to see people, like, getting further up in the ranks or something to that effect.
Yeah, I think that might have been in the thread for Kaijun's Asian record, but I'm not sure.
It was one of them. Anyway, that covers all the results that we wanted to talk about. So, the next part of the podcast is what everybody always waits for on the CubeCast podcast. My favorite part of the CubeCast podcast. Skype Team Blind, but this time, it's a little special. Instead of the regular Skype Team Blind, we're doing a Skype Team Blind blind. I can see everybody, like, saying ooh and ah, or just, you know, sighing.
Or actually saying, what the hell is Skype Team Blind Blind? Please explain Ranza to the audience that doesn't know anything about this game. Even though we did discuss this during our goddamn commercial break.
We did. So the way that this works is that since we have two of the world's best blind solvers who, granted, they don't specialize in three blind, we're going to be doing Skype Team Blind, but using a blind method. But the way this is going to work is that Roman is going to be calling letter pairs, or not letter pairs, but he's going to be calling position pairs going from the DF buffer and from the UBL buffer. And Mark, it's Mark's job, while he's blindfolded, not even turning a cube, if he doesn't want to. If you want to, you can. It's his job to be calling out algorithms, move by move. And Waffle and I, meanwhile, are just blindfolded doing whatever moves Mark says to do. So this is going to be fun. It's going to be a little stressful. It's going to be new. Without further ado, I'll go ahead and call it the scramble sequence. So go ahead and scramble in your blind orientation, or whatever orientation you want. It is R2, down 2, F2, L2, U prime, F2, L2, B2, down, L2, U2, back, L, F, U, R prime, U prime, back 2, U2, R prime, down. And your cube should look like this. I'm ready to start when y'all are.
All right.
I am blindfolded and ready.
We'll start with the edges. So, the first pair is going to be...
Ready.
FR to... No. Yeah, it's going to be FR to FU.
Okay, so X, sexy, M prime, U R U prime, wide R prime, X prime.
Wasn't it too fast? No, that's okay. All right. The next one. B, R. To U B.
Okay, so that's just U R prime U prime M 2 U R U prime M 2.
All right. So next, B D to FL.
So X prime M U prime L to U M prime U prime L to U X.
So next, B U to B L.
I guess. Yeah, what's the best way to do this? I guess I'd do just U two X M prime U prime L two U M U prime L two U X prime U two.
Okay, then U R to U L.
U prime M prime U two M U prime.
Okay, G R to L B.
B prime. U R to U prime M two U R to U prime M two B.
Okay, and then the D L edge flipped.
Should I just I'll just call this as two M two targets, I guess. So U prime L to U M two U prime L to U B L B prime M two B L prime B prime.
Okay, now let's go for the corners. So U B R to D L B.
Z prime R two U two R prime D two R U two R prime D two R prime Z.
Okay, RBD or RGB to RUF.
D or no, yeah, D L prime D prime R two D L D prime R two.
Okay, wait. I think I can screw this, so I'm just thinking how I can fix that. Alright, let's go. F U L to D L F.
I guess Y L prime D L prime U2 L D prime L prime U2 L2.
Yeah, now we have to flip the...
Wait, should there be a Y prime at the end of that?
Oh yeah, yeah, sorry.
Okay, y thank God.
So
woo!
So the final one, flip the R F U clockwise.
So I guess you can just do D prime R prime D R U two. Or no. Well that wait.
Wait. So after did the U two, what do I do?
Wait, undo the U two. Okay. Did I say to do I said D prime R prime DR.
Yes, once.
You do that twice.
So D prime R prime DR, D prime R prime DR, U2?
U2, and then R prime D prime R D, R prime D prime R D, U2.
Anything else?
I guess
should be solved. Yeah.
D and F. Oh, I'm probably too twisted.
Mine which one?
I have edges.
Oh, waffle. Okay, so
I have edges. It's okay.
So my two twisted are so I have to twist UBL clockwise, and I have to twist FDR the other way. Luckily, I can just do this.
What a great alg. I'm glad I saw it.
All right. Actually, yeah, I forgot to flip the FDR.
No!
No, my Rubik's Cube.
All right, so that's a DNF in 54439. Nice. That was fun. I liked that a lot.
Oh, man, we should do this more often.
Yeah, of course.
All right.
That's fun.
Yeah, except Mitch needs to be here.
Yeah. All right.
Yeah, we're technically almost done.
So that was Skype Team Blind Blind DNF. But, you know, fun. All right, so now we're going to move on. Thank you so much to both of you for being on the show. It's just really nice to be able to talk to both of you. And thanks again to Roman for being on Skype in the wee hours of the morning. Because yeah. What's it like? It's 3:30 in the morning for you or something?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I'm so sorry.
Oh, no.
I'm so sorry.
We could have rescheduled.
We could have. Yeah. And thank you again to Mark, though I'm probably going to be playing Rocket League with you later tonight.
Sounds like fun. Thanks for having me on the show.
And thanks, yeah. It was great. Thank you very much, Brandon, for editing the show in the near future. Better get that out there on my Friday.
Yep, yep.
Just saying.
Yep, yep. All right, and now to move on to our final words. So, Waffo?
My final words for this episode is, this water tastes like arsenic.
And my final words are, yes, that dress does make your butt look big. So thank you so much for listening. For the guests for the next episode, go ahead and listen to the CubeCast Halfcast, which will be out 10 days after this one, hopefully. And we have a lot of things that we're planning on doing. Announcements about things very soon. All right, and that ends this episode of the CubeCast Podcast. If you'd like to reach out to us, you can on our Facebook page at facebook.com/CubeCastPodcast. Or to our individual emails, waffo@cubecast.fm for Waffo, ranja@cubecast.fm for me, mitch@cubecast.fm for Mitch, even though he's, you know, not here. If you have questions for our guests or or if you want to suggest a guest to us, go ahead and send an email to support@cubecast.fm. And until next time,
thanks for listening.